You ready to do this thing?
I think so.
Get myself in prime podcasting position.
Prime podcasting position? I'm in my wife's chair. It feels weird.
Hit him with some of that NPR voice.
Good evening, Bill.
Good evening, Stanley. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to another episode of the BS Car Guys podcast. We're happy to have you here for episode number one of 2024. Season 5.
And if Bill sounds a little weird right now, it's because he's trying to mimic somebody from NPR.
Yeah, that's right.
We're going for a total SMR SMR podcast for 2024.
Well, there we go. It lasted 7 seconds.
It lasted all of 26 seconds.
That's perfect. Perfect.
27. Hey, Bill, I haven't seen you, and we haven't talked in a minute because, you know, life happens and craziness happens. And
hey, we had some holidays. We had some holidays and some stuff going on, and really, we're just going to have to dedicate this first episode to events that transpired over the holidays.
Yep,
car-related things that we did over the holidays. Stanley, do you have any car-related things that you want to share about that you did over the holidays? Do you buy any cars for any of your kids? Or
first of all, Stanley cannot afford to buy cars for his kids because Stanley can't afford to buy the car that he wants for him. Therefore, he shall not afford to buy cars for his kids. Now, and that's my statement until it changes because somebody needs something. But yeah, I think I should kind of go first. We don't talk about these things prior to. We may give general ideas of what we're going to talk about. But you have a list, and my list isn't that long. Therefore, I think I should go first because I'm going to spend a lot of time making weird ASMR sounds. What is ASMR anyway? Weird sounds about the things that you did that I didn't get invited to until the last minute.
First of all, some of the things that you didn't get invited to until the last minute, you were invited to in advance, but you weren't able to make it. So you just use in advance as your way of feeling like it's not partially your fault for not coming. And to your earlier point, ASMR stands for Anonymous Sensory Meridian Response.
Okay, what does that mean?
it's a term used to describe a tingling, static-like, or goosebump sensation in response to specific triggering audio or visual stimuli. These sensations are said to spread across the skull or down the back of the neck, and for some, down the spine and ribs.
I don't think either of us are capable of ASMR things.
No, and honestly, the scope of what it refers to has really been expanded to cover all sorts of things that really probably aren't ASMR. So for me, the thing that comes to mind is a painful ASMR experience. I do not like the sound bare feet make as they rub across dry sand. So when you're walking on the beach and you hit that like really dry powdery sand and your foot kind of goes like, I can't, it runs a, it's like, it's grating on my spine. I don't like it.
That sounds like trauma from 29 Palms.
I mean, it may very well be. I honestly think it actually stems back to when I was in eighth grade, we went on a field trip to the Outer Banks and we were like baton death march down a beach as a class, and they wouldn't let us get too close to the water and they wouldn't let us get on the dunes, so they wound up just keeping us like in the soft stuff for like 2 miles on the beach, and I don't know, I think that's where it started for me.
That sounded like every day at track practice and cross country practice and football practice and basketball practice and every other practice in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina in the 90s. Because if you played a sport, and if you're listening to this from Myrtle Beach, you understand this. And you may remember what the high school is. We went from the high school to the beach, down the north, up the beach to like 80 something Avenue North and back. And that was conditioning.
That sounds about right.
It was. And then my dad was a little,
let's face it. Problems. Let's face it. Where you grew up and where you went to school, your options for big open areas for running, for physical conditioning and training, your options were A, the beach, or B, some sort of a field, corn, cotton, tobacco, soybean, something. So those really were your two options. I mean, I'm being honest. Where I was, your options were corn or tobacco or soybean or a cow pasture. So.
Yeah.
We just didn't have the beach.
Speaking of the beach. So I'm going to start this podcast off about a trip that I just recently got back on.
Yeah.
So I went to, I had to go on a work trip to Camp Pendleton, AKA Oceanside, California, because that's where I stayed. So we flew in this San Diego airport, and this is where the car stuff started, actually, at the trip, the business trip prior to. So I worked with this guy. His name's Walt. Walt, if you're listening, I'm about to talk about you. Like I told you, I was going to talk about you, and I said I was going to pick at you. So sorry, Walt. You and Walt have a lot in common. Some things in common. He don't like EVs, right? He don't like EVs for the same reason you like EVs, and he can't really articulate why he doesn't like EVs. He just know he don't like
them. Let me just say, this week in particular, there are a lot of EV owners in this country who agree with Walt and I.
All right, cool. I know you're going to get there because it's Bill. So, but he didn't used to like hybrids either. But now he kind of likes hybrids, like Bill. But not for the same reasons, again, because his wife wanted a new car. She gets a new Honda Accord. He drives it a couple of times, realizes it gets 50 miles a gallon in D.C. area, and really likes the fact that he doesn't have to pay for gas. Also, like Bill, he has a gigantic truck. So he has a pretty, he has a Silverado, Silverado. Yeah.
GMC's a Denali.
Which, not Silverado, what's the GMC? Oh God, I'm losing my mind.
Sierra.
So, there you go, thank you. He has a Sierra Denali Ultimate. It is a very, 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 very nice truck.
Nicer than my truck.
Yeah. So, but you know, Walt works hard and he does things like this. He also likes to spend time on the beach, like Bill. He's like my alternate Bill friend. So
I'm gonna guess he's also white.
Yeah. He did play hockey, and I don't think you played hockey.
No, we didn't have anywhere to play. Yeah. Remember what I just said about the cow pasture? We didn't have hockey.
Yeah, he grew up in upstate New York. But Walt is my dude. I like Walt a lot. All right, so we got into this big EV discussion in Florida, and then so we get there, and we get our – so this is where the story starts.
Wait, in Florida or California?
In California. So we get there, and it's my coworker's turn to have the rental car, right? So like you should, we request a bigger rental car because it's two guys in their bags going. You get one guess on the car that they tried to give us.
That they tried to give you?
Oh, yeah, they tried to give us.
A Prius.
No, they tried to give us a 2023 Mitsubishi Mirage.
Whoa, that's cheap. I should have realized government money.
So they canceled his request for a larger daggone vehicle and tried to give us a Mirage. Our bags wouldn't fit in the garage. We protest a little bit. We end up getting a 2018 Kia Optima. How that was in that rental fleet, I have no idea.
Wow. Wow.
So we get there, we get to the hotel, meet up with everybody. You know, they were there prior to, and my boss, he is driving a 2024 Genesis G70.
Ooh, very nice.
It is nice. However, because he's my boss, he sees his cars like it's little and blah 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 blah. He drives much more expensive cars than G70s in his daily life. That's why he can say that. He did. He kind of looked out on the car. We would have gave. I would have gladly upgraded. Paid half of that upgrade fee, even though he didn't have to pay upgrade. Walt did something like Bill, a rental car very similar to the Bill's last rental car in California. It may have just been the same
car. Did he have a Jeep 4x4E Wrangler?
Yes, he did.
Willie's edition?
Yes, he did. Was nice. Yours gray?
It was.
It could have been the same car.
Did y'all rent from Avis?
Actually, I don't know who he rented from, but it could have been the same car. So Walt goes on he has this look on his face that I know Bill had on his face when he got this rental car. It's like, gave me this darn plug-in thing. I don't know what to do, blah, blah, blah. Then he drives it. He's like, this ain't that bad. And then he gets out and he sees that it still has a plug. It's like, and all this other crazy stuff. But however, he goes on his rant one day. So what does Stanley decide to do? Stanley decides to point out every plug-in hybrid and EV in all of Oceanside, California to Walt. All of them. You have been to California. You know the thing.
I'm so sorry, Walt. I'm so sorry.
So I go on my mission. I'm staying on target. But in the middle of staying on target, this is the fun part. Saw my first EV9. It was all right. It's not, okay. I mean, Telluride, it was the blue color. They look pretty good. I don't know if it's going to sell well, but it looks pretty good. Rivians, Teslas, you've been in California lately.
Oh, yeah.
They are everywhere.
Yep.
But the crown jewel of the things I saw in my 10-block area in Oceanside, California, was not the Taycan. It was a Lucid Sapphire.
I figured you were going to say a Lucid.
Have you seen that car in person?
Yeah, it looks like something from a movie about the future.
Yeah, you've seen that car in person. It's like, so I haven't seen that car in person, and I knew it was a Sapphire because the way it was painted and everything. I've seen one Lucid in person, but it was kind of moving and it was kind of, you know, darting. That car is bigger than I thought it was in person.
Yes.
And I might like it in person better than in the Taycan. And it could just because I see Taycans all the time.
So this is my take on it in person, because I think I've seen two on my trips out west. And I think in person it is proportionally bigger than I expected it to be,
mm-hmm.
while simultaneously being a lot lower looking than I mm-hmm. expected it to be.
Yeah.
It just looks really wide and really long. And because it's so wide and so long, the height gets pulled down and it almost, yeah. And I think that's what adds to its kind of futuristic look is that the proportions of it are so different from most of everything else on the road around it.
Yeah. And it looks like those drawings that if you're a car person, you had a little bit of artistic talent. We have drawn cars with all types of spoiler kits and everything. It looks like one of those stretched out drawings in real life. It's a very nice looking car.
It is. So, it's a good looking car for an EV. And I think Rivians look great. I think they're one of the best looking EVs on the market. I think they're one of the best looking SUVs on the market, but my earlier point was about all the people hating EVs currently that own them is because of the cold weather that we've been experiencing through a lot of the country. And I'm sure you've seen some of these news stories about all these people that, you know, we had a fairly mild winter last year and EV sales have been, you know, really good over the last 2 years. And I think there are a lot of people who bought electric cars who experienced their first truly cold snap in the time of owning a fully electric car. And I saw some pretty humorous news stories of people who were camped out in their cars and at Tesla supercharging stations where their car had been plugged up for, you know, 30 hours and they were still at 0% charge on their battery, which is pretty funny.
Well, I haven't seen that because I don't look for that kind of content. I did see a couple news stories about, you know, the effects in the winter and things like that. And we both know that we know, and the people who listen to us know that range is affected greatly with temperature change in EVs. Just like what range is affected in cars, period, with temperatures get extreme. Altitude, heat, cold, all these things. But EVs are particularly susceptible. We know that. But that wasn't the thing I really took. But anyway, back to my story. The thing I took away from being in California, because I haven't been in California since 2017, 2018.
Hermit.
So have you been to Oceanside?
Nah. No, I only ever get down as far as, well, we went to Anaheim on our last trip, but I typically only ever go as far south as like Long Beach. So.
Okay. So Oceanside reminds me of Myrtle Beach, but better back in the day.
Okay.
All right. So, I mean, same kind of like mom and pop shops and stuff. That's kind of gradually getting taken over by big corporate interests and things like that.
So but like Myrtle Beach without the syphilis.
First of all, you never caught syphilis in Myrtle Beach because you're a good boy. And I didn't either. And I was not a good boy. And I'm sure they got syphilis in Oceanside, California.
I couldn't help myself. It just came out. I apologize.
All right. So anyway, let me get to the conclusion of my story because I have nowhere close to the amount of stuff that you have. Car culture in California is pristine.
Agree.
It is. I know that some of our listeners, we, you know, well, California this, California that, blah, blah, blah. Everybody should go to California once. If there's a place that you kind of talked about or read it about or kind of just want to see, you should probably go see it. I implore you to go see it. California and cars are this thing that come together and just work. You know what I mean? It's yes. Even like older cars, like older used cars look like twice as good as they do in California than they do on the East Coast. I don't know how it happens. I've saw so many older cars that looked in really, really good shape that on the East Coast, it'd just be, you know, one of the good old boys got a hold of it, you know, and it could just be an Oceanside thing where they got a little bit more money. But man, even on the ride to and from the airport, man, it was just, you just saw every car that you haven't seen for a while. Just take a 2 hour drive in California, you'll see it. I saw Subaru SVX, seen it. Subaru Brat, seen one. Geo Prism, saw one in pristine shape. I was like, how did you get this? How did you transport this car from the
California?
It is. So if you're a car nut, And you don't like California for whatever reason you like California, I implore you to take one trip and just go see what people are talking about. Car culture is real and alive, and it looks as old as we want it to look and as nostalgic as we want it to look, as well as new and futuristic as some people want it to look. It is amazing over there. That was essentially my little story about my winter trip. Bill has 17 stories that we're going to talk about on his winter trips. starting with.
Yeah. So, okay. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is not exactly car related, but it is podcast related. So last week I had the pleasure of attending the first ever Mightier Than the Sword Film Festival held in downtown Asheboro, which if you don't know, that's our friend Ty Brew, who we had as a guest on the podcast. That's his record label. So he hosted a film festival in downtown Asheboro. Originally, I was slated to speak about some videography stuff in a panel, but my work schedule has just been pretty crazy. So I had to back out, which I still feel really bad about, but I'll get him next time. Also, while I was there, I got to sit in a live studio audience for a taping of one of Neil Hoover's podcast episodes, who also has been a guest on our podcast. So little double guest action follow-up. Neil did a live podcast for his episode taping for his podcast of Creative Businessmen, where he interviewed the writer and producer and director and one of the stars of a movie called Cannibal Comedian, if you're into like B-type horror movies. It's a new movie that's kind of making the film festival circuit currently. And also one of the guests that was in the panel was one of the original and one of two remaining original members of the film Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And so, awesome. Yeah, because this is the 50th anniversary of that film. So anyway, that's kind of a side note. Got to do that last week and see those guys. That was pretty cool. Yeah.
All right. To jump in there, I need you to do me a favor.
Yep.
Ask Neil what he's going to be in next, because I like to watch the stuff that Neil is in to support Neil.
Yeah.
Ty, I didn't know that you were having this film festival, but Bill just told me this now, so he's going to put it on his calendar. So next year, I'll try to come up, because if you're a friend of Bill's, you're a friend of mine. That's how I see you. And I like to support my friend's stuff. So there.
Also,
if you noticed at the end of last year, we started having a little bit of technical difficulties. Actually, you wouldn't have noticed because we couldn't upload anything.
Yeah.
We think we have a fix. We think we have a fix. Evidently, Spotify has some issues when they upgraded their thing. We couldn't change the format of podcast the way that we used to, so kind of figured out a workaround. Spotify, you didn't really help that much, but you know, I figured it out.
There you go. Okay, so I'll back up to Christmas. So we recorded our last podcast just right before Christmas. So I'll start with Christmas Day. I sent Stanley a couple pictures, the first kind of car-related thing that I did. Let's see. I may have to turn off my background filters so that I can get this thing in here and it not be blurry. Okay. So I've got it up here in the office.
Uh-huh. Where did you go? Wait a minute. Did I do something? Yes. The Lego Beast.
So, I just have to say, this thing is unbelievably awesome and complex. Has a real working manual winch on the front. Like, just unbelievable. But this is a NAS Defender 90. I guess it's not even an NAS. It's a British, it's a European spec because it's a right-hand drive. It does have, I went ahead and did the modern overland conversion and put the LS in it. So at least I got one LS swap done.
You didn't say all of that.
Yeah, I didn't. I was saving some details for you. I don't know if you can see it in the camera there, but
I can see it.
I also kept the original. I went ahead and built the original inline six engine, and then I just put it in the back, you know, so it could just transport it around.
Because, you know, that's what Toyota, that's what's good. That's what Toyota V6s are good for, sitting in the back.
Well, it's a Land Rover inline six, so.
I apologize, sir.
That's okay. I just don't. I don't want to upset our purists out there.
You mean you? Yes.
Yes. Correct. Has two jerry cans, a functional high lift jack, and a toolbox that opens and closes full of tools, which is just crazy. Everything about this was way more detailed and intense than I thought it would be.
All right, and just in case you missed that part, this is a Lego
Yeah, specifically it's a Lego Icons is the series, because you know they've got all different kinds of Lego sets, but it's Lego Icons, Defender 90, and 2,336 pieces.
And Bill did this all on Christmas Day, it feels like. It seemed like it came out the box.
I would say on Christmas Day, I did roughly 75% of it. By the end of the day on Christmas Day, before I went to bed, I had everything but the Overlander, the roof rack and the accessories and the engine upgrade. You know, I had the base vehicle built, and then a couple days later, I got around to doing all the other stuff. I didn't work on it the day after Christmas, because the day after Christmas, this is what Stanley referred to earlier when he said I told him at the last minute, my friend Sean
Before you get there, Bill says he got this thing done 75% on Christmas Day. This is how Stanley sees it. It came out the box. He zoned everybody out and focused on building this thing. And all of a sudden there was a picture up and I got it, because that's what it felt like. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not entirely inaccurate. So the day after Christmas was kind of a rainy and messy day here in North Carolina and Virginia. Mm-hmm. Which is relative for this story. But Sean and I both had the day off of work, and so it seemed like a good day to do it. We loaded up in the car and drove to Virginia, specifically to Christiansburg, Virginia, specifically to Duncan Imports in Christiansburg, Virginia. We've only been talking about Duncan Imports on the podcast for 5 years, and... Yep. I finally went. So huge shout out to Carson at Duncan Imports. If you're going to head up to Virginia to go to Duncan Imports, be sure to talk to Carson. He will take care of you and make all your JDM dreams come true, because they literally have everything. I was completely blown away by the selection of cars that I saw in person. Their website is completely accurate as to the variety and the quality of their cars. They are not. So we got to see a lot of the private collection, because that's what's there. And then they also have cars for sale. And obviously some of the private collection cars are just in unbelievable condition, you know, rare, low mileage, rare options, you know, whatever the case may be. But the stuff, even the stuff that's in inventory for sale, they're not trying to put on a false pretense of what the car is. You know, these are older cars, and they're in varying degrees of shape, and they're not trying to hide anything. The car is what it is. And personally, I think I didn't see a single car that I thought, well, for what that is, that's ridiculously overpriced. You know, they were all priced well for what they were. So anyway, that being said, some of my personal favorites that I saw at Duncan Imports kind of changed my perspective on a few vehicles, which is kind of crazy. I walked away from there really wanting a Gallant VR4 wagon.
First of all, that's a good thing to want. Yes. Because that car was awesome. Second of all, yes. Good luck. That's probably the only place that has one.
Yes, probably so. And then also, they had I got in a Mini Cooper. That was cool. I fit in one very nicely. I could see myself owning one.
If you don't think you can fit in a Mini Cooper, you haven't tried to fit in a Mini Cooper.
Yeah, kinda that's like, exactly right.
Kind of like Miatas.
Yeah. And I don't know if I was supposed to or not. They said on the inside, like, you couldn't open the doors or, you know, because some of these are private collection vehicles. They don't want you just, like, messing with them. But this was outside, and honestly, the window was rolled down, so I got in it to roll the window up in the rain because I didn't think it needed to get that wet. So I felt like I was doing them a favor. And then
you were.
They had an Evo 5 or 4. Man, that car looks so good in person. Like, I've always liked that car. We saw one in Charlotte at that place we went to. This one was that kind of gray with a hint of, like, a blue in it.
I'm looking at the car right now, actually. Yeah.
it was so nice. And then also they had what's the car called? The Stagio wagons. Those were phenomenal. Big fan of those. They had one that was, like, I guess probably private inventory because I haven't seen it on the website. They had one that was outside that was, you know, on the website or is on the website. But the one that was inside, man, I'm telling you, it was the, like, midnight purple, like the Earth R34 midnight purple. Oh, it was gorgeous. And then the big limos, dude, they're like Toyota Crowns or Celebrity, whatever the, like, the biggest ones are, right?
Yeah.
Man, those things. I would drive one of those things in a heartbeat, dude. They just look like baller. They're just, it's on another level. It's like the styling of the car is pretty just bland and square and low key.
Yep.
But it's one of those cars that, like, if you were driving it, people who know would know and everybody else would never know. And that's really cool.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. One of my biggest things that I took a lot of things away from Japan, my time spent in Japan, and how conservative a car can look and how that can be miscued for boring until you get up close to it and touch it and then get on the inside and you start to notice all the little things that just make it special. Like the wool seats and a crown are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Until you feel it, it's like, why would somebody make seats made of wool? This sounds dumb. And then you sit in it, it's like, oh, this is nice. I give you another example. It's like, it was like this because I had the same sensation in Europe. In America, we really don't get it that much. Well, I guess we're starting to get it now a little bit, very little bit. The premium cloth seats in European cars.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Much like, nicer than our cloth. Our cloth is cheap cloth.
Yeah. Yes. You look at it, it's like, oh, that looks okay. It kind of looks hard. And you sit on it, it's like, oh, this is amazing. But anyway, nothing importance.
Unbelievable. Really nice people. Great selection of cars. Great collection of cars. Just a really cool way to spend, you know, a half a day just walking around and nerding out on cars. Which is exactly what I did. So a lot of fun. Glad I went. I highly recommend going, you know, should you find the time and the opportunity to do it. Next thing on the list. So.
Oh, well, before you move on, reasons why Stanley didn't go. Stanley had no idea what he was going to be at for Christmas because he had people and people just showed up at his house. So it's a good thing that Stanley didn't leave for Christmas. Go. So, holiday time, like I'm sure for everybody else, is very hectic in my house. And I have family now that's going 6 different directions and we try to herd them like cats and it doesn't work sometimes, but they seem to all eventually show up at Christmas and other people. But anyway, next story, let's go.
Next story. So a couple days before Christmas, this showed up on Bring a Trailer. This is a 1993 Honda Accord. Mm-hmm. But this 1993...
What are Stanley's favorite cars?
This 1993 Honda Accord has a manual transmission. And...
That's the not engine, the right engine.
And the engine that comes with it, with the manual transmission, both came from a JDM Prelude. So it has the, they both had, they had a 2.2 liter H22A. This car was in Raleigh. It was tuned by a shop that I know and have been to before. And it was dynoed at like 188 horsepower, which doesn't sound like a lot because it's very conservative. But what's really cool about it is they had the VTEC on this thing, like, pulled all the way back to like 4,200 RPM. So this thing was in VTEC like every gear all the time. It just sounded amazing.
Probably felt amazing driving it too. Yeah.
I got really excited about this thing and may have bid on it right up to where my wife cut me off. And by the way, my wife was involved in this bidding with me and was allowing me to bid. These were not behind the scenes bids. These were, good decision. we were watching it, the auction together, and I made the decision that I would bid it to 10 and get out. And so here was my last bid, and then it just kept going. And it wound up going out at $12,250. So I missed the car by $2,250, which I feel was a decent amount of money for somebody to pay. It was more than I wanted to pay and was willing to pay. But great car, good buy, and very tastefully modified. Nothing crazy. It's the exact kind of spec I would want in a, you know, reasonably modified car. So that was the next thing that happened on my Christmas break.
I agree. That is that generation of Honda Accord holds like this special place in my heart because it's one of them cars that, you know, what were we, like early teens? Yeah.
Lucas's dad had like a 91 or a 92 maroon with a 5-speed manual, and I wanted that car so bad.
It's one of those cars that doesn't look fancy, especially by today's standards, but it was one of those cars that was close enough to get close enough but far enough away that I just couldn't get it.
Right,
washing dishes didn't support the purchase of that car.
Neither did McDonald's and laying tile and cleaning houses and doctor's offices and slinging furniture wrap and all that, whatever else jobs I did. Okay. And so the next thing on the list of stuff I did over my Christmas break was, so I had my company holiday party. Christmas party was we had it on I don't know, the week after New Year's. So like that next weekend, whatever that weekend is, 2 weekends ago. And we had it at Biltmore. And so Kendra and I first went to Biltmore together. She went when she was a kid, I guess, but I had never been. We both went together on our honeymoon. So that was my first time going. And we have probably been back. We've probably averaged about one visit every year to 2 years since then.
But we want to go. So shortly
around the same time we went on that first trip, I don't know that it was there on our first trip in 2002. So it may have been like, you know, 03, 04, something like that. Land Rover opened up a Land Rover Experience Center at Biltmore, because Biltmore is, you know, it's roughly 8,000 acres of land still associated with the residents.
Vanderbilts.
Yeah. And it's the Cecil family now, but yes. And so the land's kind of divided, like 4,000 acres is around the home. And then there's the river, and then there's like 4,000 acres, give or take, on the other side of the river. And so really using some of that farmland that's on the other side of the river, that's not, you know, obviously it's not traveled by guests regularly. They use a trail system that they've built over the years to take people on driving experiences. And I would classify this, now it rained quite a bit while we were there for the couple of days that we were there. So the trails were very wet. I would call most of the trails slimy and moist. You know, everything was just really spongy and muddy and wet. So some of the trails that I would have probably liked to go on weren't really options because of the conditions, and it just was too, you know, it would have just been not good on the trail system. It's not that the vehicle probably couldn't have done it. It would just be that, you know, it just would add to erosion issues that are probably already there. So they were just kind of closed for the weather. Okay. So I would basically classify my driving experience. So we drove a new Defender 110. I would have preferred to drive like an old NAS 90, you know, solid axles front and rear would have been my preference, but a new Defender is not bad to drive.
Was it white?
No, Pangea green. Hang on, I'll show you.
Cause it sounds like a car that you went to shop.
I mean, I have shot these things for a while. I mean, I test drove one. Remember I sent you video or picture when I was test driving one.
Yep. So yes, you did.
So anyway, I mean, this is pretty close to the spec I would probably buy. You know, it's got the winch bumper on the front with a winch. It doesn't have the white top, which I would definitely do. But it's Pangea green. So it's pretty close to the spec I would buy. I don't know how I feel about the mild hybrid inline six. I probably would prefer the four cylinder for simplicity's sake. But anyway, the car drove well. I would say it was very much like doing a very involved test drive, right? It wasn't all out like beating on the vehicle, off-roading, you know, winching. There you can see my spotter, co-driver, instructor, whatever term you want to use. His name was Sean. Super nice guy, very knowledgeable, also prefers older Land Rovers. We drove the Land Cruiser, so when he saw what we were in, he's like, oh, well, we'll bring you back from the dark side. He did not. I'm still a Land Cruiser guy, but did enjoy the Land Rover or the Defender. I'll be honest with you, it was more capable. I guess I shouldn't say that. It was more comfortable doing the things that we did than I expected it would be. There were a couple of spots that we went through that were fairly technical or very slippery, that on basically street tires, and they were the all-terrain option, you know, from the factory. They weren't just like comfort tires, but they also weren't aggressive, you know, be of good wrench or, you know, mud tires or anything. Considering the conditions, there were a couple of instances where I thought, I don't have enough, you know, speed or wheel speed to do this the way it needs to be done. And the car just did it. So I was pleasantly surprised at how capable it was. The computer system that manages the four-wheel drive bits is extremely smart at figuring things out. That's all I know to say. Because there were some moments like lifting wheels in mud, out of mud, where I thought, yeah, this thing's going to struggle. And it just chugged along through it, like literally no problem. So I was pleasantly surprised. I would have liked to have done some harder things, but it was good. Overall, it was worth it. And if you're even remotely thinking about maybe buying one of these vehicles and are curious of what it's capable of doing, I would recommend the Land Rover Experience. I think they have like three or four locations in the U.S. to do this. Biltmore being one of them. And like, this was a really deep hole that we went into, and, you know, cameras never really do it justice, but I mean, we were leaning over at a pretty steep angle there, and it did bottom out the bottom of the chassis a little bit, and it just pulled on through. And I mean, honestly, we never once had to, go into like extended mode for the air suspension to get the little bit of extra to get off of stuff. We just did it in normal, like high off-road mode. I offered for Kendra to drive. She did not want to drive. She declined. She rode in the back seat.
Of course she wasn't going to drive.
Well, and this was like part of my Christmas present too. So, you know, I guess she was making sure that I got to enjoy all of it. But, you know, I was going to give her the chance if she wanted to. Anyway, it was a lot of fun. I highly recommend it. There was some pretty cool stuff. We did a couple of hill climbs where he was like, if we don't make it on the first go, we ain't gonna make it at all. Cause it's so slick that once we knock the top layer of leaves off, there's going to be no traction left. So there was a couple of little kind of scrambles that, I wasn't sure if we were going to make it or not, but it powered along and did it. I was looking, yeah, here's like probably the deepest mud hole we went into right here.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you share these videos on social?
Yeah, they're on my Facebook.
Oh, yeah. I should be able to. So, yeah, if you want to see these videos, look at the Facebook. Check out Bill on the Facebook. How many vehicles were going through all this at the same at the time? Maybe I missed that part. Did you say
Oh, sorry. No, it was just me. So what we did, the package, there's different packages you can do. And the package that I would have probably preferred to do, the whole thing kind of got a little mixed up because we were there for our corporate event and I had booked that, but I used that booking to kind of help me get a discount to do this. And obviously I paid for this, or we paid for this. This is my Christmas gift, but I leveraged my corporate booking to help me get a discount on this. Which is one of the reasons why I finally got around to doing it, because it is a little bit pricey. In fact, I would say it's probably, for what I did, full price, I would have considered it to be slightly overpriced. But this was the half-day, four-hour experience. I would have preferred to do, they had on their website some sort of a heritage package where you could drive like the old Defender and then the new Defender kind of back-to-back. At least that's how it read. I would have preferred to do that. But anyway, so we did this, and then basically what you do when you pay that price is essentially you're like renting out the whole vehicle. So you could take, you know, three passengers with you if you wanted to. But you know, I just took my wife, and I don't know if they do multiple vehicle convoys. I'm sure they do. You know, if you went and you booked, you know, three cars, they would put together three cars to do it. But anyway, it was in a very busy day. It was on a Sunday and then the weather had been bad. So we were the only booking that morning. But anyway, thought it was fun. Also, these guys are all employees of Land Rover North America. So they're not employed by Biltmore. These are just, so Land Rover has these things set up around the country at different locations. And these are Land Rover employees. But they're not salesmen, so they're not trying to sell you the car.
But speaking of salesmen and not trying to sell you the car, so how much did you regret not going through with the purchase?
What do you mean, and not buying a Land Rover?
Yeah.
Oh, not none, zero. I wouldn't have bought it. I mean, it made me want to go buy an old one. But yeah. Still not on the list. I mean, it's not like I'm looking for one now. I'm still wanting a car with a manual transmission. That's still my next purchase in a vehicle. So yeah, I enjoyed it. It was fun to experience it off-road, having driven it on-road in a previous test drive. You know, it's kind of cool to compare it and realize that it is an insanely capable vehicle, both on-road and off-road. But yeah, I'm not going out to buy one. I mean, if I had to buy a new SUV, would it be on the list? Probably, but I don't have to buy a new SUV right now. So,
are you sure you don't? Because there's another part of the message that you text that you sent me that kind of implied that you might have to buy a new vehicle.
Oh, so yeah. So final thing that happened was last week on Wednesday, I was coming home from town, coming home from Wednesday night church, and was driving exactly the speed limit, and
yes, you were behaving good. Yes, you were.
And some cars were approaching, like I was, you know, meeting some cars, oncoming traffic on the road that I live on, which is a 2-lane road, you know, and at night in the dark, it's pretty dark. And I saw the car coming towards me hit their brakes pretty hard because their headlights just dropped, you know? And so my brain immediately said, deer. And I glanced, I saw the deer, and it was multiple deers, but the one that was in the front that was clearly going to make it to me in time. And I did the quickest mental math I've done in a long time. And I basically had enough processing speed, brain power to say, that deer is going to hit me slap in the middle of my door, in the back door of the truck, at the speed I'm currently going. If I hit my brakes, maybe it gets into my door. So that's a wash. Or I just accelerate and hope that I clear it, or at the very least, put it in the rear wheel. So that's what I aimed for. So I just laid into it, and, you know, I blame it on the turbo. I blame it on the fact that the turbo on the diesel takes a second to spool up. There's a little bit of lag. And that little bit of lag means that that deer hit like 7 or 8 inches in front of my rear wheel. And it got the very, very edge of the back door. I mean, just enough to just put a tiny little crack in the paint. You really can't even tell that it rolled the door. I think it did, which is why I cracked the paint, but you can't see it. And then there's a cap. There's like a valance piece along the bottom trim of the truck at the bed corner that it just completely busted it off. And the backing piece behind it that snaps onto the body panel at the corner of the cab. It just ripped that whole piece off. And then it also caught the corner of the bedside just in front of the wheel. So, you know, there's a 12-inch long, 14-inch long section of the truck from the edge of the door to the wheel well that was impacted by the deer. Obviously, it killed the deer instantly. I stopped.
That is not obvious because deer are very resilient.
Well, this was not a very big deer. Let me just state that too. This was a smaller deer. In fact, let me look at.
And we do live in Carolina, so our deer are small compared to other people's deer.
That's correct. Look like
running cows.
That's correct. Thank you. Yes. Thank you, Stanley. This deer was a smaller deer. I'd put this deer at, you know, 80, 85 pounds max. Okay. So not a big deer. And it hit my door, or it hit the side of the truck, and I really probably wouldn't have even stopped. But as it made impact, I glanced in my mirror to see if I could, you know, see what was happening as it happened. And I happened to see that piece that it broke off the corner of the cab go flying out into the road. And so I just stopped and pulled over. Now, Kendra was 150, 200 yards behind me. So she saw most of it happen. And so anyway, I stopped and she pulled up and said, do you want to just hand me the food? And Anna and I'll go on to the house and start eating, because we had picked up drive through. And I was like, no, I'm going to be just a minute. I'm going to turn around and get my piece of plastic and throw the deer in the ditch and I'll be at the house, you know? So anyway, I walked back. I drove back and parked right in behind the deer so I could get some video of it and take some pictures of the damage to make sure I could show the
insurance,
the USAA. And so anyway, so that's what I did. And I'll show you, I'll see if it, I don't know if it'll go full screen or not. Hang on a second.
I'm glad that you did not get hurt. Nobody got hurt, but at the same time, Dear, what are you doing? We got to get Bill to spend some money. You should have ran into the front of the truck, yeah. made the airbags pop so we can get a new truck. I don't know what, dear.
So that's it. That's it. That's all the damage you did. Just that little piece.
And also,
it's not terribly a lot of damage, but here's the thing. You see how it's dented up the bedside right there? Because the F-150 is aluminum, and I know there are some listeners out there that are already thinking this, so I'm getting to where your brain is. Because it's aluminum, the body shop that I took it to said, you know, it's iffy if they'll be able to fix that dented portion there. This is the next day in the sunlight. If all of that'll come back out or not. They have some like heat thing and glue that they can pull, and they think maybe they can pull it out. He said, but if it doesn't come out, then it'll be a whole bedside replacement. So well, that potentially, yeah, that's exactly right. So potentially this tiny little thing, and you can actually see in this picture where it actually cracked a little bit of the aluminum. That's how hard he hit that.
That's one of them things where, look, they may get, I wonder what they do with old parts that come off of cars after they replace them.
I'm sure there's a pile of them, and then they recycle them or scrap them.
Or sell them, because that don't look to be that much damage.
Well, I mean, so that's the thing. It's hard to tell on white, but if you looked at it in person up close, you can clearly see how much it's dented in. But it is hard to tell on white. Because even when I sent it into USAA, they were like, yeah, I can't really see where that's dented in the video or the pictures. So, you know, it is hard to tell. But that's why I took it to the body shop guy and let him look at it. And he was like, yeah, that's, you know, it's hard to know with aluminum if it'll come out, but we can try. But if it doesn't, then it's just going to be, you know, replace the whole bedside, basically.
So you escaped with your life.
Yeah, yeah.
But we don't get a new truck.
Nah, there's no new truck. I mean, there may be a situation where the truck is, you know, in the shop for anywhere from a week to a month, depending on what parts have to be or don't have to be ordered and how long they take to come in and how long USAA takes to cut a check and approve stuff.
That's pretty
and,
quick.
Yeah. Well, they've already paid me the first payment of what they thought it was going to cost. So, I mean, that was like no questions asked. They just send you money. Like, here you go.
Yeah, because my children are driving age, and you will experience this in a few years. USA is pretty quick with their stuff. Well, from my experience, it's the reason why I overpay USA for their insurance.
That's a very good point. I mean, I've only ever had to file a claim with them one other time, and they were phenomenal. But that was years ago, so they didn't even have this, you know, submit pictures and video on the app to file a claim thing that they have now. So it made it even easier. But anyway, big fan of USAA so far. No problems. We'll keep you posted. It doesn't actually go in the shop. The first availability in the shop wasn't until the end of February. So I'll keep you posted on how it goes. You know, I'm thinking that if it's if we get to that point, and it looks like it's going to be a while, that's the excuse I need to go get a car with a manual transmission, so I've got something to drive while it's in the shop.
That sounds like an excellent reason, not excuse.
Thank you, Stanley. Thank you.
Sounds like an excellent logical reason. All right, so I know that's pretty much your list. However, I do have a couple things for you. And so a good friend of ours is looking at a TDI Jetta. And really? We like your public opinion on a TDI Jetta. I forgot the year, but it is newer than the one that you used to have. But it's older than Jettas out there. I told him that you put like 900,000 miles on yours and did all the things in it and never had an issue. But hearing it from you may sound a little different. So your opinion on buying a TDI Jetta in 2024?
Yeah, so I don't know the year, and I don't know the exact spec on the one he's looking at or the current mileage.
I'm gonna look and see if I can find it real quick while you're talking.
Here's the synopsis I will give you of my Jetta that I had. I bought a 2002 Jetta TDI, automatic transmission, 1.8 liter, 90 horsepower, 110 pound-feet of torque was the spec. Drove it. I bought it new with 17 miles on it the day I bought it. When I sold it 10 years and 6 months later, almost to the day, when we sold it, it had 269,000 and change on it in 10 years. So we did drive the car everywhere. I tracked it at VIR twice, and I did a impromptu rally stage in a field with it, and it probably did 15 laps on a rally stage that involved basically jumping it and outrunning a WRX STI. So
that's what TDI Jettas are for.
That's what TDI Jettas are for. And it was, I like to call it silent but deadly, because it was not fast. It was a momentum car, but from a little ways away, the engine was so quiet, you know, up close, they sound like tractors, but from 50 feet away, you could barely even hear them running.
Yep.
And so anyway, it was a great car. The transmission was my letdown. That would be my only recommendation, is do some research, find out what transmission is in the car. And, you know, I don't know if there's a way to test for slipping, but that's what killed most of those third gen Jettas, Mark III Jettas, as they're referred to, is the automatic transmission. They were a sealed unit. They had no service interval. There was no aftermarket, secondary market used ones that you could buy. If you bought one out of a junkyard, most likely you were just going to repeat whatever you were already having happen. And new ones were twice the cost of what the car was worth when you had to replace them. Most people experience catastrophic transmission problems between 100 and 150,000 miles. I just made it to like 250 before mine started, which was weird, because I beat on it every day. But
which is why it lasted so long. Well, this Jetta is a 2011 Jetta TDI Sport Wagon. It has 90,000 miles on it.
How many?
90.
Ooh, manual?
And they only wanted three grand for it.
And it's only got 90,000 miles on it?
Yeah. It's a diesel. That, people don't know what it is.
I mean, that's a hot buy. I say buy it, and if he doesn't buy it, I want to buy it.
Yeah. I told him to buy it.
I mean, 2011s are not a desirable body style. They're very, like, roundy, pointy front ends. But they last forever, man. The only thing I ever replaced, I mean, the transmission's what killed it. I mean, that is what it is. If I had bought it with a manual, I'd probably still own it. The only thing I ever had to replace on it in 10 years of ownership, these are my parts list. About a year after I owned it, the seat bracket on the passenger seat broke and was covered under warranty because there was a recall for the bracket. Mm-hmm. About eight years into ownership, I had a series of issues in which the mechanic that I was taking it to at the time thought that and misdiagnosed that it was a glow plug issue. And so we replaced a glow plug, but it came back, and thought that maybe we got a bad glow plug and replaced it again, and it came back again. And before we replaced the glow plug the next time, I said, how about we trace the wiring harness and see if there's a problem with voltage to that plug? And sure enough, that was the issue. So replaced the wiring harness, problem solved. Never had another mechanical engine related issue out of the car ever. It's the only time it ever had a problem inside the engine bay. The only other problem that ever happened, and the Volkswagen dealership covered it, is it had a short in the turn signal stalk. And so for a couple of years, because I was too lazy to do anything about it, you would drive down the road, and regardless of steering, throttle, or brake input, it would at random, at completely random intervals and timing, make the sound of the turn signal or the four-way flashers ticking. So like that, and it would might do it once, and then 25 minutes later it'd do it again, or it might do it once every half second for 10 minutes straight and then stop. Of course, if you have two 15s in the trunk, you don't hear it as much. So you can drive around for quite a while without having to worry about it. But eventually it'll drive your wife nuts and you have to do something about it. So that's the most expensive thing I had to have fixed on the car. It cost me like $250.
So that was the thing that I think you left out that was would have been very informative to our listeners is this vehicle had was modified from the audio standpoint a little bit.
Just a little bit.
That's how we used to do it. Another thing.
Because we were audiophiles. We liked ASMR, but with music.
Correct.
Wow. You see how I brought this episode full circle?
I did like the tingly feeling. I remember the tingly feeling we used to get from a bass drop. Absolutely.
I'm going to go ahead and say that car had one of the best sound systems of any car.
Didn't it start off with a Monsoon? Not Monsoon. It had a brand name on it at first, because I remember
I never changed the head unit. It was the stock head unit.
It was a stock head unit, but it was a name on the speakers. It wasn't Fender. It was before Fender, I believe.
Yeah, it was before they did the Fender partnership. I want to say it was Blancpain or whatever.
I was thinking it was Monsoon or something, but it may be Blancpain.
Yeah, it was one of those.
To bring this thing all the way back around, one of my favorite YouTubers and a growing car nut. If you're getting into racing, and Bill may agree or disagree with me because he knows racing way better than I do, is he got into F1 here recently, went to the F1 race in Vegas, did a breakdown of F1 stuff, and I thought it was pretty informative. Why are you making that face?
I'm waiting for you to say the name of the channel.
All right, cool. So one of my favorite YouTube guys, MKBHD. All right. So he has had a few cars. He's driven a few cars over the past years. He does review some cars. He kind of does it in a unique way that I talked about before. But his daily driver for the last three cars were Tesla Model S's and up until the Plaid. So he was driving the Tesla Model S Plaid. He turned 30. And he bought himself a birthday present. Don't Google it. What do you think he bought?
A Porsche, a GT3.
He bought himself a Porsche 911 Turbo S.
Yeah, that's that. Right now, that's a YouTuber car of choice, is either a GT3 Touring or a Turbo S. And it's because the Turbo S is the only thing from the factory that accelerates anywhere close to the Plaid.
He really didn't buy for acceleration. Like I said, he's growing in his car fandom. He's always kind of, he's a tech guy, obviously, but he started getting into tech of cars, became friends with Doug, and a couple of other people start appreciating cars a little bit. Wanted to get something very different, especially because after his F1 different experience and driving some other people's very, 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 very expensive cars like the Remick Nerair and the P1. And that's what he decided to get. And have you seen, you're Googling, I know you're Googling.
I'm not.
The car is flat black with a gloss black stripe down the middle. It is pretty.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
His that's thing a good, is, that's a good spec.
Yeah, he like I think he wrapped it because he generally wraps all his cars, but flat black everything is one of his mottos. So the car is flat black with a gloss black stripe down the middle. It's pretty nice.
I'm not gonna hate on flat black. I like flat black. I did watch his video driving the Rimac Navara.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool. That's a pretty cool car.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool car. And the people in the car, right? So those are people who work on his team. They are not, most of them drive like Subarus and other little things like that. So that is not fake.
Yeah, I didn't think, yeah, you can tell. That's a genuine, experiences.
Like the black kid that was in there, Miles, he has a site where he kind of a YouTube channel where he reviews cars, but the rest of them they're just film crew. They didn't know they were going to get in the car, and then I think one of the coolest parts about that video was walking around them guys' house. Yeah, did you go? Yeah,
I don't know that I went that far in the video. I may have skipped to just the driving part.
So in the beginning they. Like I told you in the video, I put them on the length and thing. The video is kind of filmed from three different perspectives. Him driving the car and reviewing it. The camera crew and their whole experience getting out there. And then Triple F's kind of being enamored by him because he's a pretty big guy. And he thinks they're pretty good big guys. And then them going to the aquarium and amazing supercars in the end. But the first thing that happens is they walk up to this house and they film the house. It's like, this is ridiculous. Right. And then they walk in the door and it's like, oh gosh. It's like, oh gosh, that's a P1. That's a Bugatti. That's how. And it's because you walk in the door and everything is there. Every car that is on a poster in kids' walls is in that, feels like there, it is in that house, garage thing. I don't know what you call it. What do you call a house that is primarily a gigantic exotic car garage staging area?
Barn dominium or garage dominium? I'm not sure.
Yeah, whatever that word is, that. But
that's become very popular too.
Yeah, we can talk about farm dominiums offline. So that was an EV guy primarily going ice. Look at there.
Yeah, there are a few people who wise up out there.
One day, I'm not gonna ever convert you. I don't want to because I like arguing with you about things.
And you know better. I mean, there's an expression, choose your battles wisely, you know.
Also, I don't want to, anyway, I will hold to my statement. There should be an even distribution of everything.
Including common sense, which would reduce the number of EVs on the road.
Or diesel trucks at roll call.
Yeah.
See how that. See. Yep. Anywho, hey, South Carolina's law about that the Carolina squat went into effect. You know what I stopped seeing? Cars with trucks with Carolina squats.
Kinda isn't that wonderful? That. I know. I still occasionally see them in North Carolina, but they're much less prevalent than they were before that law went into effect. So I'm pretty happy about that myself.
And I think that's it. First one of 224. We should hit 100 episodes this year.
Yeah. Do you know what number we're on currently? Like, how far out are we? Do you know?
Why are you asking me hard questions?
I don't know. We don't have to talk about it on the podcast. We talk about it offline. We'll have the number next time.
It's like 88 or something like that. No, so
we'll get there this year then. It'll be close.
Yeah. Well.
All right. I love you, brother.
I love you too, man. Night, Bill.
Good night.